who have been using AI, I'm sure they will participate in this competition. And we hope that at least two such instruments are not just created, they are also put up before the regulators and they become a norm in other utilities to follow. And that's how we plan to scale up Entyce as we go forward from year on year.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and of course, philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of jobs and lives. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial, professional, and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YT Music, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. Our guest for this episode is Saurav Kumar, Vice President for India at the Global Energy Alliance for People and Planet, and a key architect of India's energy efficiency movement. A 1992 batch Indian Revenue Service officer, Saurav has held major roles across the Income Tax Department, Ministry of Power, and Bureau of Energy Efficiency. But is perhaps best known for his groundbreaking work as the head of EESL, where he led large-scale programs like Ujala, which brought affordable LED lighting to millions, and other national-level energy-saving initiatives across homes, municipalities, and villages. An IIT Kanpur alumnus with a public policy degree from Japan, he has also worked with the United Nations on environmental issues across the Asia-Pacific. With decades of experience straddling policy, climate, and governance, Saurav brings deep insight into what it takes to drive large-scale change. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, Saurav. Delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you, Gaurav, for having me here. And I look forward to this conversation with you.
You know, Saurav, there is something, we're having this conversation at a time when climate change and the impact of climate change, if I may say so, has reached our homes. It's easy to be dazed, but we have to participate in bringing about that change. The world has already breached the 1.5 degree Celsius warming threshold, and a global political and economic uncertainty is actually causing multiple disruptions. So there are too many constraints and parameters that we have to navigate in this very complex problem, from supply chains to demand to social order. And these are turbulent times, if I may say so. Do you believe the global energy transition is still on track to meet the target set in Paris? Or do you think that we probably now need to take stock and take a status update and probably be more realistic? And you know, as a corollary or supplementary to that, when you look at India specifically, what will it take over the next, say, 5 to 10 years to not just keep up the momentum, but actually lead this? What do you see, you know, what kind of role do you see for GIAPS in piloting this, and also specifically in the context of the Global South?
Thank you, Gaurav. I'll take this question in two parts in the same manner as you've asked. Yes, you rightly point out 1.5 degrees seems to have been breached. We are heading towards a 2 degree in the next 5 years. So it's a cause of concern. As you rightly point out, the world order has changed about 3-4 months ago, and climate is not necessarily a word which is very, very popular in the most powerful country in this world. However, having said that, if you see, there have been offshoots of good news coming from across the world. Look at the Africa continent. There, two or three multilateral banks, including World Bank and the African Development Bank, have taken a pledge to connect 300 million people with clean and green energy. It's called the Mission 300. We will have, in the next couple of months, revised pledges from the European Union. Of course, India is completely on track, if you really ask me. In fact, India has been performing exceptionally well in the G20 countries. Perhaps we have the most ambitious mandate and the most ambitious objective that we have set for ourselves moving forward till 2030. And it's important that we look at 2030 goals and not necessarily start to say that, look, we'll become net zero in 2050, 60 or 70. It's really important to make sure that the 2050 goals, 2030 goals, my apologies, are adhered to. When it comes to India, if you look at where we are today, we are just over 210 gigawatts of non-fossil fuel power. There is a long way to go. Almost 300 gigawatts need to be added in the next 5 years. It's a tall order, given the fact that last year was the highest capacity addition in renewables of about 30 gigawatts, still insufficient to meet the 500 gigawatt target. But if you see what is happening, and that's really not has been focused much, two programs I will highlight. One is the PM Suryaghar, which is a very ambitious program of connecting 1 crore households with solar rooftops. It's just about a year old, and almost a million homes have already been connected. 5 gigawatts of capacity has been added. And I have no doubts in the next 2 years, we will reach a capacity of about 50 gigawatts. Number two is PM Kusum, which is largely solarizing the agriculture sector, which accounts for 20% of India's energy needs, and also 150 gigawatts of connected load. Three states in particular, Rajasthan, Gujarat, and Maharashtra, have together initiated a 60 gigawatt of solarization initiative in the next 2 years. So there are green shoots in India. I have no doubts that we will not only reach, but perhaps exceed the target of 500 gigawatts. And also, before I end, it's also important to see that what is India's role in the entire global south. India is perhaps the only country which will develop using clean and green energy. No other country in the world has ever done that. And this is a unique path that we are creating as ourselves, as Indians, supported by various entities, including GIAP, that will be replicated in countries across the world. In fact, many of the programs that we are running here in India, we are replicating in other countries where GIAP is present. So I am fully confident of India reaching the target and being a leader of clean energy in the global south.
You know, Saurav, it's good that you alluded to where we stand right now, 210 gigawatts as of March 2025, slightly more probably now. And 30 last year was, of course, a landmark year in a sense that we added nearly 30 gigawatts of renewable energy in one single year. While you say that this momentum is sustaining, but I have we are getting there, but still a long way to go. You did mention that we are still some distance away from reaching the target of 500 gigawatts by 2030. If I were to ask you specifically, very briefly, what are the big gaps that we need to urgently address if we are to be realistically hopeful of reaching the 500 gigawatt target in the next 5 years?
Well, excellent question, I must say. And two things that need to be done almost as of yesterday is getting flexibility in the grid. By flexibility, I mean storage. Unless you have storage, it is very difficult to integrate renewable energy. Number two is the flexibility in the grid can also be added by digitization of the grid, which means you are able to then seamlessly integrate renewable energy and particularly decentralized renewable energy. As I said, decentralized renewables there has been a renewed focus by the government of India, MNRE, and lots of distributed solar is getting installed around the country. Both these works have already been initiated by us. We have demonstrated this and we are going to scale this up very, very quickly. How do we fill in this gap? I think I told you about three states. There are 10 states that account for 70% of agriculture consumption. I think what is needed is that replication of the Rajasthan, Gujarat, and Maharashtra model in these states. Some of them we are also supporting. Secondly, if you see the renewables market, more and more choices are now being made towards round-the-clock power. So I think with these two coming on stream, I'm fairly confident that we will achieve the target, which looks daunting at this point in time.
Saurav, you know, let's change tack a bit. Let's talk about climate tech funding. And last year, if I may say so, a little bit disappointing, because climate tech funding stood at just about $50 billion raised globally. It was down almost 40% compared to the previous year, which is 2023. Isn't that a worrying signal? And how is GIAP working to shift the narrative? Because after all, we need to unlock capital, because we are talking about massive amounts of power that needs to be generated. And that means locking in capital for long years, and huge amounts of money and capital need to be made available. So climate tech funding has to do a lot of heavy lifting for long periods of time, year after year. Don't you think last year was a bit of a disappointment? How can we get around it?
Yes, Gaurav, for sure. It's not just last year. I would say this has been a consistent trend, particularly in India, where climate tech startups and fundings have almost not risen at all. And the reason are many. Number one is you have these fintechs, your health techs, your edutechs. These tech platforms provide two things. Number one, there is an open market. There is no regulatory hindrances if you were to do a fintech. Maybe a bit, but not too much. And therefore, there is a very large market, and a VC could potentially grow their returns to 3x, 4x in a matter of 2 to 3 years. And therefore, as a VC whose main interest is to increase their return, the focus never goes to climate tech, which of course takes a long time, maybe patient capital. The second important aspect which I wanted to highlight is that, unlike other sectors that I spoke about, the infrastructure sector, and particularly power and energy sector, is heavily regulated. And therefore, there is not an open market there. And therefore, what is needed is a support to this ecosystem, both in terms of funding and also regulatory assistance. Now, I'll give you an example of this, which happened about 6 years ago when EVs were coming into India. EV charging is essentially a sale of power. Now, as you know, sale or resale of power is a regulated entity. It's a licensed activity. But Power Ministry in 2018 came out with a clarification that charging of EVs is not sale or resale of power. It is a service. And that has led to a boom in the EV charging industry. Of course, not in the same way as we have seen in Europe or US, but certainly it is much, much better. Therefore, what I think is needed is both providing capital support and also the kind of regulatory assistance. We have just launched an innovation challenge exactly to support the climate tech ecosystem, where we have put out a couple of challenges related to grid, which is going to benefit in the distribution utilities, the consumers, the country as a whole. And we intend to support this through an ecosystem of partners, which will make sure that funding is provided to these startups. We have a very eminent jury which is going to finalize who are the winners of this challenge. And side by side, we are also working with a couple of utilities to make sure, and regulators, to make sure that the product that comes out has a market under the regulatory setup. So I think this is something that we intend to grow as we move ahead and bring in more and more sectors or subsectors in the electricity sector under the domain, open them up. This could include demand response, demand flexibility, so on and so forth. So that is what we as GIAP are intending to do. And we have almost 40 to 50 partner organizations who are helping us in scaling this up.
Yeah, sort of, you know, you did mention about startups, and there has been a very promising bullish signals coming from that landscape. So India has more than 3,000 clean energy startups. But my question is more about scaling, because you need to go from zero to one and then going rapidly going from one to 100 is where the real challenge lies. You know, from a, how do you scale from a promising pilot to a viable business? That still remains a massive challenge, especially if you look at the evidence. About 80% of startups actually don't go beyond the fifth year. You have a unique approach by bringing together public institutions, private capital, and philanthropy, meeting somewhere midpoint to make these very promising startups scale. How is this model playing out on the ground in India? What is the evidence that you get, and what are the kind of examples that you know stand out as very promising illustration of scaling from concept to a very large operable model? How critical are this kind of the reason I'm asking this question, because the partnerships are very cross-sector here. You have public institutions, which also brings in a lot of policy heft. Then you have private capital. And then you have, of course, philanthropy. All three are together here. Sometimes they can pull in different directions, but they need to move in, you know, in tandem and to make this happen, because clean energy startups can then and only then probably not just survive, but scale.
Yes, absolutely correct. As you rightly say, this is a complex sector, a variety of actors, including state governments, central governments, et cetera, et cetera. But before I answer your question, Gaurav, let me put together a landscape as to what is the opportunity. Now, if you look at the Power Ministry's data, Government of India, the billing efficiency of the sector is around 85%, which means 15% of electricity, which is produced is not billed at all. Now, if you look at what in terms of value that is lost in the sector, particularly at the distribution end, taking an average cost of power of 5 rupees, a very conservative level, it's almost 1 lakh crore of losses that happen without billing. Now, if you are able to digitize this theoretically, and are able to figure out where these losses are happening, where the leakages are, potentially almost 90% of this, given maybe 10% is the system losses in India, almost 90,000 crores worth of losses can be averted if you were able to simply digitize the whole system and have innovations and innovators come and provide this as a service. It's also going to create a whole body of startups and investors who would be very, very interested in this. Now, let me tell you, some things have already started. If you look at the smart meter journey that this country has undertaken about 2 or 3 years ago, today, as of now, as we speak, about 7 crore smart meters have already been ordered by various utility. And this is basically in an investment mode, meter as a service. So none of the utilities are buying meters. These are a consortium of investors, technical partners who have already committed more than 1 lakh crores in investments in the distribution sector. This, according to me, I've been in this sector for more than 20 years, both in Power Ministry and elsewhere. I have never seen this kind of investment flow coming in to the distribution sector. And the good news, if you see, I'll take an example of Bihar distribution utilities, both of them. They have the largest number of smart meters today, nearly 5 million already installed. Both these DISCOMs, North Bihar and South Bihar distribution companies, have shown operational profits for the first time in the last 20 to 25 years. And therefore, my stress is on digitization. If you digitize, you make that sector transparent with a bit of unlocks of policies and regulations, you can create a vast ecosystem of innovators coming in. I think the two-wheeler market in this country, which really has expanded, one reason has been the fact that charging of EVs have been deregulated. And now you see you have 2 or 3 unicorns already in the sector. So I have no doubt in my mind that with the kind of AI ML tools that have been developed, that this sector, once the digitization process takes steam, once the number of smart meters that are getting installed becomes large, it'll really spur a kind of a massive investment drive, innovation in the sector, which will ultimately lead to its financial turnaround.
Saurav, you know, let's talk about your Entice program, and it's in its second season now and open for applications. But help us understand this, or what the origin of this, how did this come about, the thinking behind it, what was the inspiration to launch this challenge, and you know, what are you specifically trying to solve through the second season, and how is it different from the first season 1.0, and what are learnings and outcomes that you have brought into the second season?
Yes, Gaurav, the thinking was very much what you started off this segment of this podcast is the fact that not much funding is going into this climate tech sector. And that was the original idea of setting forth this challenge, which we started off in 2023. And the philosophy behind this is that we are doing things through our own programs in various utilities, governments, et cetera, we want to have an innovation challenge that can fit into our program. So the first round of challenge that we did, we focused on battery energy storage because we had started a program of commissioning 40 megawatt hour of battery storage project. In fact, it got commissioned a couple of months ago. It's the first project in India to be commissioned at this scale, at the distribution end. And three challenges were in 2023 were related to battery storage. And the outcome was absolutely brilliant. Two of the winners have already received funding. In fact, one of the winners has now a pipeline of nearly 1 gigawatt of battery storage project. They also won the project that we floated. So we want to now replicate this success in 2025 on the grid digitization piece. We are doing a grid digitization work in the state of Rajasthan. And we will have in the next 3 months large amount of data, not just the grid data, but also smart meter data. And if you see the two challenges that we have put out, these are challenges which are essentially related to demand response and energy efficiency. How can we nudge a large number of people, entities who are connected to the grid towards demand shifting, towards energy efficiency, so that the overall the utility benefits by a reduced overall power procurement. So again, the philosophy is very similar to the first year. We will provide them with the data. We will provide them with the access to the distribution utility and the regulator. And we are pretty sure that with the kind of IT startups and deep tech startup who have been using AI, I'm sure they will participate in this competition. And we hope that at least two such instruments are not just created, they are also put up before the regulators, and they become a norm in other utilities to follow. And that's how we plan to scale up Entice as we go forward from year on year.
You know, sort of Entice, Duet, and GUP's broader mission all point to systems level change. Now, let's do some scenario mapping here. If we were to have this conversation, say 5 years from now in 2030, and which is a kind of a milestone year for India's renewable energy goals, what is that one milestone you hope India will have successfully crossed by then? And what do you think GUP's next big problem statement will be in 2030?
So, Gaurav, before I respond to this, let me tell you the perils of not reaching our goals. And if you recollect, in 2017 or 18, Government of India announced a 175 gigawatt target of renewable energy by 2022, which was later increased to almost 200 or 225 gigawatt. We fell short hopelessly to reach that target. Now, what is the outcome of this? As we all know, we are the fastest growing economy in the world, and our energy needs are growing pretty much fast. India has ordered 80 gigawatts of thermal power plants in the last 2 or 3 years. 24 gigawatts are being built by NTPC alone. Now, if we do not meet the targets of 500 gigawatts moving forward, I dare to say, I don't know what will happen to our clean energy and net zero goals. Because look, if we were to reach net zero by 2070, India's power sector has to decarbonize by 2047 to 2050. Now, if a thermal power plant comes on stream sometimes in 2035, do you think it will be possible for anybody in 2050 to ask the thermal power to shut down? So that's the danger of this. What we would like to see is very simple: to reach to be on course and also perhaps accelerate our clean energy growth. We must not lose sight of the fact that we have to reach a 500 gigawatt target by 2030. This also includes, by the way, 47 gigawatt of battery or pump storage plants also coming on stream, because you need that much of flexibility in the grid to integrate renewables. And of course, we also hope by in the next 5 years, at least 15 to 20 distribution utilities are fully digitized that will aid in integration of renewables. What we have set ourselves a target as GIAP in the next 5 years is that we will, by our own actions and our own resources, make sure that we nudge at least 10% of these things, and also stimulate a market so that these activities start to happen as we go ahead. What after 2030? I think we need to accelerate our goals. By that time, hopefully, we would have learned a lot of things in the next 5 years. We could, in any case, if you see today, round-the-clock power is cheaper than new coal. And I'm sure in the next 5 years, the batteries technologies and battery chemistries will change. So we will push for a much more accelerated clean energy transition as far as India is concerned. And of course, being an international organization, we would like to take these lessons to other parts of the world, which also will face very similar challenges as India.
You know, Saurav, you've been closely involved with India's energy and innovation story, and you've been tracking this like the back of your palm. What's one breakthrough trend or story that excites you the most right now regarding India's direction towards clean energy?
I think a very fresh and good emphasis on decentralized renewables. And to my mind, the PM Suryaghar Yojana, which intends to initially connect 1 crore households with solar rooftop with a very generous subsidy, I think is really a game changer, not just for India, but also anywhere in the world. It is one of the most ambitious just transition pieces or instrument that at least I have seen. And given the fact that it is moving along pretty well, that's something which gives me confidence that we will be able to move away from the traditional way of energizing houses and entities, which is you have power plants hundreds of miles away, coming through a transmission lines. Here you are consuming and producing power at the very same level. Similar is the case with other forms of decentralized renewables, particularly agriculture, which is a sector which is bleeding the electricity sector the most. So I think the fresh emphasis and push to these two sectors gives me a lot of hope in that we will continue to have this momentum as we move ahead.
And finally, Saurav, if a young entrepreneur is listening to this podcast now and wants to enter the clean energy space and has deep interest in it, what is that one piece of advice that you would give?
I think the space is just about opening up. If you look at the electricity market in this country, just about 5 to 6% of electricity is actually traded in the market, which is going to change very dramatically with the advent of these decentralized energy sources, whether it is batteries or EV charging or it is rooftop solar. I think many more models of transactions is going to come up. If you recollect, IEA and Nandan Nilekani's foundation have actually said that Unified Energy Interface, UEI, could really become the next UPI of this country. And if you again remember, UPI is driven by innovators. So my advice to young startups is to watch out for this space, don't be shy of thinking new, thinking big, because this is a sector that is going to open up relatively very soon. And I said the amount of losses in this sector that need to change is humongous, and therefore it has something for a large number of people. You might need more than 3,000 more clean energy startups, deep tech startups here, which can usher in a change, which will not just be relevant for India. This is going to herald a new era of digital grids around the world, including in the developed countries. So I'm extremely optimistic, and I encourage startups to start focusing in this area. It may not give you immediate results, but certainly it's something which is going to be, in my opinion, create at least 10 to 15 unicorns in India in the next 5 years.
Thanks, Saurav. That's a very optimistic note to end this podcast on. Thanks for dropping by and sharing your deep insights and having this conversation with us, Saurav.
Thank you, Gaurav. It was really, really exciting, and I thank you very much for inviting me here.